Welcome to the Lights Out Podcast. This is Chris Lights Out Lytle, and this is our journey to document the history of mixed martial arts. I have brought with me my friend, the MMA detective Mike Davis, and together we will preserve the history and hear some great stories from the world in the era of the no holds barred. Thank you and enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, by request from one of our listeners, Aaron Pack, super cool cat, real good guy. He's been hounding me about the Pacific Northwest scene for a long time. We've got a few interviews done in that area, and it's rich history, but we would be fundamentally stupid not to include somebody's career like Landon Showalter. Landon!
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show, brother.
Appreciate it. Look forward to it.
So, in essence, we take a slow walk through people's lives and their journeys in mixed martial arts, where they're at in the beginning, where their heads were. And we obviously crossed certain finish lines that we're hoping for. Landon, you're one of those guys that you look at the record and it's incredibly deceiving. The amount of murderers that you fought, it's pretty incredible.
It was a good time, man. I wouldn't want it any other way.
That's good. Well, here, let's start from the beginning. Where are your mixed martial arts starts? Like, where does your journey start?
How far back? From the very beginning.
Beginning, brother.
Well, basically, you know, like every 70s kid, you grow up watching Bruce Lee, you know, and growing up, I was always just a martial arts nut. Never could afford it. I was too poor. So I couldn't really do it, martial arts, until I got older. I did a couple years of traditional, found out it's not my thing. I don't want to talk too bad about it, but it's not very practical. So I just quit martial arts for, I don't know, 3-4 years, maybe longer. Did one of those knock up the high school girl type of deals, right? And so very early I was married. I think I was like 20, you know, trying to do the dad thing. And of course I was with someone I could not stand, you know. But the way I grew up, you know, you make a baby, you take care of the baby, you marry the woman. Anyways, long story short, that didn't last very long. I was going through my divorce. I had a couple kids, and I was really stressed out. I was starting to kind of drink too much and go the wrong direction. I was pretty angry and that sort of thing. So I needed something positive. And then I just decided I want to check out martial arts again. And then I was actually driving down the road, and I just saw a studio that said Pancration on it. I had no clue what the hell that was. So I drove home. I took the number, and I gave the studio a call, and he explained to me it was MMA. And I was like, well, I'd love to try that out. And he goes, all right.
What year is this roughly?
99.
Okay. So Pancration was just kind of, I'm assuming
it was Matt there. Hughes. I mean, we used Pancration more than MMA back then as far as an explanation. But then as the sport got more popular, it was just easier to call it MMA.
The name. Yeah. The name Pancration was kind of, all right. So I'm assuming
people are like, what the hell is that? You know, so that's my main background is AMC style Pancration. I didn't train specifically with Matt all the time. I have trained with him plenty of times, but I was underneath his student, Charles Pearson.
Dude, Charlie Pearson, baby. Another staple of that Pacific
Northwest. I stayed with Charlie the whole time. Now he works for ONE FC.
But with Matt.
I 22 years old, thought I was tough, smoked a pack a day. But I lifted a lot of weights, right? So you think you're a badass when you're young. So I walked into his gym and I was like, you know, I really want to fight. He goes, oh, do you? Like, and I go, yeah, I do. He goes, I hear that all the time. I go, well, I'm for real. I'll fight right now. I go, I don't give a shit. I'll fight right now. And he goes, see that kid in the corner? I'm like, yeah, the 12-year-old? He's like, yeah, go kick his ass. I said, what? I go, I'm not going to beat up your 12-year-old. He goes, he'll be okay. So I went over there and the little shit heel hooked me in like 30 seconds. I had never seen a heel hook. Didn't know what the hell it was.
Landon, you should have went
with the sucker punch. I got my ass kicked by a 12-year-old.
You should have went with the sucker punch. You know, I told you.
My ass kicked by a 12-year-old. So instead of taking that in a negative way, I was like, wow, that's fucking amazing. So as I'm going home, I'm like, I know what I'm doing for the rest of my life.
Just a 12-year-old. Do you remember the name?
Joey Holt.
Okay. A little bit of an MMA background there.
So, yeah, Joey fought and he never went pro, but he actually, it's unrecorded, in my opinion, has the fastest knockout in the world. It was 1 second.
Oh, at one of the UFCF shows?
No, dude, it was a little, yeah, one of the little amateur shows.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
So that's how I got started.
With Matt Hume and like that, I guess the lineage surrounding him, he's got a way to kind of initiate people.
Matt Hume is a pretty interesting gentleman. He's doesn't play around, right? He just gets to work, man, and he works your ass off. And he's a rough coach. He's a rough coach. One day, one night, when I was training with him, I had my rotation was Chris Lieben, Shoji from Pride, and Matt. Those were my training partners for the day. It was a rough day, but I enjoyed every bit of it. You know, it was kind of cool to fill out Shoji because I used to watch him in Pride all the time. And that fucking guy is tough.
So we've had Aaron Riley on. We've talked to Monty Cox.
No, Aaron very well.
Regards to like we talked to Monty Cox in regards to like Rich Franklin training up there. And they all said that at some point or another, Matt will pull you aside and say, "Hey man, you and I are gonna go." And he proceeds to beat the shit out of you, make your life a living hell. Did you go through that?
I did. So my nose had been broken once, never in a fight. It was training with Matt. That day when I was training with Chris, Matt, and Shoji, I did fine with Chris and Shoji, right? And Shoji's bigger than me, and I fought Chris already, so I already knew that. So we were just doing a thing. But when it was Matt's turn, standing up, I felt okay until he clinched me. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I tried to create distance, and he just kneed me up the center and broke my nose. So that was my last round. Really? Oh yeah. And then I drove home to Charlie's gym and he starts laughing when I walk in. He goes, I go, what are you laughing about? He goes, you obviously sparred with Matt. I go, yeah, my nose is fucking broken. He goes, welcome to my world. And I was like, Jesus, dude. But it did teach me a valuable lesson from that point on. Did I ever push off somebody's chest to create distance? Hell no. I would start punching to get out. You know, so Matt Hume was a very good trainer, but he doesn't mess around. And he'll tell you straight up.
They say it's like a rite of passage. Like after he beats you up like that or breaks something, it means he's finally accepted you.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it took a little while. You know, I had to follow my coach around a little bit, but then it got to the point where I could train up there solo if I wanted to. So it's pretty cool. I felt pretty fortunate. Got to do a couple trips with Matt, taking amateurs to other fights and stuff. Good experience.
That Pacific Northwest in the MMA boom, mm-hmm. I don't think it gets enough credit. Like in regards
to not at all.
No, in regards to like the world scene of tough mm-hmm. guys, everybody mm-hmm. was talking about the country of Brazil.
Right.
But the little pocket of that Pacific Northwest, I would argue, is just as decorated.
We have put out a lot of UFC champions, ONE FC fighters, you know, Strike Force, all the organizations. We've had plenty of fighters go to all of them. I didn't quite go to the UFC, but I did fight for Strike Force and other organizations. And we have a big scene up here, actually.
And like, I think like if you gave somebody 30 guesses, you know, right when the explosion was taking place, mm-hmm. them picking that part of the country would have been anywhere in anybody's top 10. But here you got Team Quest, and then you got like that Matt Hume coalition and Charlie Pearson. And it's like if you combined all of them together,
you got Ivan, you know,
Ivan Salivary,
Dennis Holman, Jeff Munson came from here,
Josh Barnett,
you know. Who else was it?
Jens Pulver? You can even argue Jens Pulver's from there?
Yeah, Jens from Linwood. Oh, no, he's from Yelm. Him and Dennis had a thing in high school. That's right.
Yeah.
Benson Henderson's from here.
It doesn't
Randy
stop.
Randy Couture's from here.
Doesn't stop.
Matt Lindland, Chris Lieben, Ed Herman. They're all Northwest guys.
Ryan Schultz.
DJ.
Oh, DJ, yeah.
I mean, the pound for pound best fighter in the world.
Ever, no. You know, arguably. Ever. Yeah.
He has the most titles in the most organizations. He's a stud. And I grew up with these guys. They're all guys I know. And I feel fortunate I got to come up with them.
Well, let me interject real quick. All the names that we just talked about right there, I think Rico Chiparelli's from that area as well. All of those names that we just talked about, you guys are within 4 hours of driving from each other.
Yep. And coming up, that's where we fought. We fought each other.
Benji Raddick.
Yep. Benji, that's another one.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't stop. Like, it doesn't, guys all are within 4 hours of each other.
And I came up fighting all them. They came up fighting on us, you know, and we all took our different avenues in our careers. For me, it was more about travel and experience than fame for me. So I just wanted to fight and have fun, take the hardest fights I could.
You also came up when all of those names that we just talked about were cutting their teeth, and you were their training partner. You were the guy that you were the nail to their hammer.
I was in there. Yeah, I was in there. We were scrapping it out. Those were my training partners.
This is why Landon Showalter is on the show. I mean, it's 100%. Like, you were an integral part, greatly underappreciated, from an area in the United States that arguably put out the greatest fighters our country's ever had.
Yeah, a lot of people used to call me the toughest no-namer that they know. I'll take that as a compliment, I think. All right, cool. Well, I'm tough. Thanks, brother.
Yeah, I don't get the social media likes, but you get punched in the face by the people that do.
Yeah, I fought all the guys that are famous.
Right. Well, let's talk about your first fight ever. Matt Pearson, United Full Contact Fight Federation, June 24, 2000. How long had you been training before you took that fight?
3 weeks.
That's awesome. I figured that, dude. It's got it written all over it.
I just said, fuck it, let's go. I kept bugging him. He's like, you're not ready to fight. I go, I don't care. I want to fight. He goes, but you're not ready. And I just bugged the shit out of him until it pissed him off. He goes, all right, fucker, I'll get you a fight. I was like, sweet. Then he got me a fight. And I was like, and I did the fight. And I realized what the fuck he was talking about. But, you know, I had to experience that. I'm that guy. I do everything the hard way. I want to experience it before I make a decision on things. And it was an experience.
Well, I got to tell you this, and like nobody's told me this, but looking at your record, so you got June 24th, 2000, all right? That's your first fight. Matt Henderson, you lose by choke. Was it guillotine, I'm assuming? There's no record of it.
Who was it?
Matt Peterson.
Yeah, it was a guillotine-ish. That's what it was, but it was actually fire throat from too many Marlboro Reds. To be honest with you, the choke wasn't in. My throat was on fucking fire, and I was like, fuck this, and I tapped.
Well, here's the issue that a guy like Landon Showalter has. The next fight he takes is August 19th, 2000, and you're the co-main event on Matt Hume's show. So what that means is you're also a monster ticket seller.
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, I have a few friends out there, but I think a lot of it was that I was a really tough opponent for anyone that they could build their guys.
Okay, so you think it was more a good B side than it was a ticket selling A side, because you're co-main event often in your career. Right.
Yeah, I was a lot. Co-main or main.
Okay, was this a last minute fight then?
Which one is fight?
So we're talking co-main event against Drew Godson or Goodson.
No, that was planned. I had enough time. I think I trained a month or so for that one.
Yeah, so you're like 2 months in, dude. You're fight ready. You're as fight ready as they come.
Yep. Hey, bud. Yeah, I was just down, dude. I love it. You know, I love to fight. I was born to fight. Whether I got famous or not, I just love to fight.
Submission to slams. You don't see that often as a result.
Yeah, with chest slams. I mounted him, and he was grabbing onto me. So I got pissed, and I just started slamming his head into the mat. And then he just went limp.
Really? That's a smart move. That's it's a rabbit punch without doing it. Yeah, you're not getting called
on it. It's an old school move. You don't see that anymore. You know? I was foot stomping fools before Chris was fighting pro. You know? Yeah. And then he got famous for it. I'm like, fuck, I used to do that shit all the time.
So your co-main event, you win by submission to slams. You're the co-main November 4th, 2000, Tom Brown.
Oh, man.
And then you wind up December 2nd, 2000. So like when you fight, it's pretty often. You fight a guy that becomes your nemesis from Canada, Craig Sloan.
That motherfucker. I don't know what it was with that son of a bitch. It's funny because we really like each other. Right? Like we're buddies. We talk all the time over social media and shit. And that fucker, man. The first time I fought him, it was at AMC. It was at AMC in a gym show. And I was actually going through all my problems. I probably shouldn't have fought. You know, I was going through my divorce, going through all that drama. My head wasn't in the game. So he submitted. I think he Kimura'd me pretty quick, first round or something.
It says armbar, but those things are
not. Oh, armbar. That's probably what the hell you're talking about back then. It was not an armbar. It was definitely Kimura. So then I was like, that's some bullshit. You know, whatever. I'll just get through all my drama. I said, amateur fight and move on. And then I had an opportunity to rematch him on 4 hours notice.
Wait, let me find it. I have it. Okay. That was May 1st, 2003. So it was years later. It was 3 years later.
Yeah. And in between that.
Oh, no. April 4th, 2002. Craig Sloan. Okay. There it was. Okay. So it was 2 years later. Okay.
I apologize. So then I rematch him on like 4 hours notice. I worked graveyard. I was a grocery guy and I was driving home from a graveyard shift and I get a call from Charlie and I'm like, what's up? And he's like, you want to fight? I'm like, that's a stupid question. You know, I want to fight. He goes, like at noon. I'm like, what the fuck? I just got off work, dude. And he's like, well, I need someone. It's Craig. You can rematch him. I go, dude, I've been up all night working. He's like, I know you want the fight. I'm like, well, I do, but at 4 hours notice, bro. He goes, take some of those stupid pills you take and then get your ass over here. I was like, fuck. Like, all right, man, I'm on my way. So I went to the house, grabbed my shit, popped a couple Rip Fuel, keep me awake. And then we went to and I rematched him. And I actually, even Matt Hume and Charlie cornered me. And I put it on him, man. And there's no way I lost that fight. But somehow the judges thought it was going to go his way. So I was like, you got to be shitting me. So now I got that in the back of my mind. I'm like, dude, I won the second fight, but I got screwed on the decision. Even Matt Hume was like, no, you got screwed. And I'm like, so in my head, I'm one and one.
Hold up. For sure. Are there any weigh-ins for this bout?
I don't recall that we had weigh-ins.
There couldn't be. I mean, you're 4 hours.
No, I mean, I just showed up and fought. So no, I just ran in. No.
Right.
I just showed up. Let's go. Did the fight, whatever. Matt, Josh Barnett, myself, and a few other people. I think, I don't know if Mo was there or not. But anyways, we went and had food. And then I'm like, man, I got to go straight to work, you assholes. So I just went home, grabbed my shit, went to work. So I pulled two all-nighters to do that fight.
Oh. You know? And you got beat up. Or you didn't get beat up. You took an L. You took three L's. Yeah, you took two at work and then one at the fight game.
Yeah, dude, it's such bullshit. But, you know, Craig's a great guy. There's nothing. It's not his fault. I have no problem with Craig. He's another one of those tough guys that just didn't get notoriety from Canada, you know.
From British Columbia, known as the Crab Gibson's Kickboxing and Pancration.
Yep.
You guys settled the score for a third time March 1st, 2003.
Motherfucker. Again. I'm like, and then I was arrogant. I'm like, I already fought this cocksucker twice, and I beat him the second time. There's no fucking way he's going to beat me tonight. So I go in there, and I'm just laying into him. I had him just striking the shit out of him, whooping his ass on that. And then he kind of clinched with me. Well, I didn't realize he clinched with me because I knocked him out. Right? Yeah, I hit him. I knocked him out, but he fell forward. I thought he clinched me, so I engaged with him, and I threw him. And it woke his ass up. And then I got reversed, and then he started kneeing me in the head and lost the decision. And after that, I was like, you know what, Craig? Fuck you. I'm done with your ass. I said, whatever. I'm like, it's good game. It's over.
So
I go, no matter how good I do, I just get fucked with you. So I'm done. But now we talk a lot. We like each other.
Well, it's another guy from that Pacific Northwest, Chael Sonnen, who we failed to mention.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like his three fights with Jeremy Horn.
Yep. They just have your number. It's weird. Like Dennis Holman and Matt Hughes. Same thing. Right? Matt Hughes is going to be everybody that Dennis most likely might lose to. But he had Matt Hughes, you know, had his number. Craig had my number. What it was is he's a short-ass wrestler, and I'm a tall striker. You know, so like when I tried to take his head off in the third fight, I kicked right over his head. So I was like, dude, I'm going to take his head off. Missed, went right over. I was like, damn it, man, grow a couple inches.
It's crazy, like the friends you make in the fight game, and just like
I consider him a friend. It's not like we hang out or anything because he's in Canada, but he's a really cool guy. You know, no animosity from the past. If anything, I think it's fucking funny. And yeah, that old bastard had my number.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fight, dude. Yeah, we're cool.
I swear, everybody's got one of them. You know.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, you're right. Right. Hey, how you doing? Yeah. All right. Yeah, I feel you.
Well, you're at work right now. Why don't we give your business a plug?
Okay. Well, I'm at good old Arlington Kickboxing. I'm about an hour north of Seattle, and we're a little small town. It's growing community, but it's where I grew up, and I really feel at home here, so I came back. I'm not really a city boy, and I was living in the city for a while. And after my whole episode with my ex-wife when I was young, I just want to go back home where it's a little slower, you know, smaller town. That's what I'm used to. And that's what I like. You know, I'm a big fisherman and, you know, outdoors guy. So if I'm not in the gym or if I'm not, you know, sparring or doing whatever, I'm fishing.
Another person from that Pacific Northwest who actually is a pretty talented grappler, Gerald Strebent as well.
Who was that?
Gerald Strebent. Another guy from
not
that
real
area.
Familiar. Not real familiar.
From Oregon. Yeah, it's from Oregon. All right. Well, here you're on a roll. You're running it. Sean Halvey or Haley, you from Oregon Jiu-Jitsu. You beat him by KO. Then you wind up over at Desert Brawl. JT Taylor is the promoter.
Yeah, good old JT. That's some funny shit. JT is cool enough. I mean, I didn't know him that well, just through the fight world, you know, a bit.
What was your experience with JT? He certainly had a reputation.
I didn't have anything. I mean, his show was pretty hokey, but overall, he set us up in a nice place, and he took care of us for the most part. I didn't have any issues with JT.
What did you think about how he and Matt Lindland, their little beef, how that rolled out?
Well, rolled out because I saved it, fuckers. I don't know what happened. I just know that they were supposed to fight and they were talking shit to each other and JT was talking big and all that. But then he pulled out 3 days before the fight. So who do they call? Mikey.
Yeah, they gave you a call, dude. They gave you a call.
Give me a call.
But JT, like you said, everybody's got somebody's number. It seemed like whenever Matt Lindland would like, you're not the desert dogs, you're the desert chickens. And then JT... I mean, like normally a person would be like, yeah, Matt, that's kind of dumb. JT would completely lose his mind in regards to that. Was he just like a real easy guy to set off or was it just?
I didn't have any real weird experiences with him or anything. I think that was just an Oregon thing, you know? I don't know. But, you know, if you know Matt, he's kind of a knucklehead too. You know, he's a farm boy. He's known for being a dirty fighter and all that good shit.
He was known
for being a dirty wrestler, so it's just going to go with his style.
So we interviewed Matt. It's one of the most interesting interviews that I've done. Like when you research somebody, you got to go over their body of work. Like you really got to dive in. His wrestling history and pedigree is much more fascinating than his MMA history. And his MMA history is MMA history is freaking mind-boggling. It's one of our best interviews. But his wrestling history is far more controversial, far more outlandish, and I don't know. I mean, he's mind blowing. You actually fought him. How did he smell? You always hear about his funk.
Yeah, it wasn't the most. I mean, he was a bit ripe, you know, but it wasn't the first human I fought that smelled a little special. I mean, Dennis Holman didn't smell that great. You know, both of them were a little ripe.
Did you ever get any rounds in with Evan Tanner?
I didn't. We were trying to set up a fight with Evan Tanner. It just never happened.
Okay. IFC June 15th, 2001. You're known for your stand-up. Everybody says, like, everybody who I've talked to about you in preparation for this interview say that you've got an iron chin. Like, the guy, you can stand on his chin. Like, the dude is as solid as it comes. Robbie Lawler is standing across the cage from you.
I was not intimidated one bit. I was told he was a wrestler. Monty Cox told me he was a wrestler. I actually was an amateur, and I was down training, just training. And Charlie pops his head out of the office. He goes, "Hey, you want to turn pro?" I'm like, "Of course." He goes, I go, "Why? When?" He goes, "Tomorrow." I'm like, "The fuck, man?" He goes, "Tomorrow." I go, "Where?" He goes, "Oroville, California." And I'm like, "Bro." He goes, "If you want to go, you got to pack your shit now and drive." I go, "Ah, fuck it. Let's do it." So my buddy and my jumped in my car, fucking started driving. My buddy's smoking weed the whole time down there. I'm like, "Dude, could you blow that shit out the window? You know, I got a fight here and I'm driving their asses down there and you're just chilling." So that was kind of funny. I mean, now I obviously look back, it's whatever. It's not like he had to fucking corner me anyway. So we get there. We drive all fucking night. I show up there. I get to Cali around noon or so.
How many hours driving?
About 12 hours.
Okay.
So that's basically why I said I took it in 12 hours notice.
Hold up, ladies. Let's kind of do the math on this. Hey, dude, they got to fill a spot in California. Robbie Lawler, he took third in state in wrestling in Iowa, so he does have a wrestling background.
Yeah.
But it's Robbie Lawler. He's a fucking stud. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to drive there. You know, and here, what did they pay
you for? And a cut weight.
And he had a cut weight. What did they pay you for that fight?
$600.
You spent that on gas. Oh, shit.
Yeah, we didn't get paid shit, bro. Back, our generation got paid like dog shit. Yeah. To me, it was cool. I was like, fuck it. I get paid to fight. Ah, sweet. I'm fighting a wrestler. Okay, he's going to try to take me down. No. So I get in the cage. Whatever. It's Robbie Lawler. I'm told he's a good wrestler, which they didn't lie, right? Technically. But they didn't tell me he's a wrestler who doesn't wrestle and likes to knock people out. You know, me not knowing any better. And you got to remember, I fought recently and took some heavy shots in that fight. But growing up, I wasn't really much of an athlete. I was kind of had a rough upbringing.
Let me set the table. You're 100% correct. So June 1st, 2001, you lose a decision to Trevor Michaels or Mike Callis. Okay, so, yeah. Dude, three round. I mean, I read the comments online. It was a
fucking war.
It was a fucking war. You've had a few of those. Mm-hmm. And then, 14 days later, you got to go drive 12 hours and fight Robbie Lawler.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Dude, it was fun. I'm glad I did all this crazy shit.
All right. So you took some punches a few weeks prior. You got Robbie Lawler standing across the cage from you. And, you know, when like, if you want to use it in like political speak, they would say, well, my truth is that Robbie Lawler's a wrestler. But no, he's a wrestler that doesn't like to wrestle. He's a wrestler that likes to pound your fucking head in.
Correct. Yeah. So they knew what they were doing. They're like, we're not lying, really. So I was like, fuck. So I get there and I don't have time to sleep. I throw my shit in my hotel room that I don't really even use. I end up getting pissed and leaving. And I head to the venue. I was overweight by about 3 pounds. So I threw on sweats, hoodie, or sauna suit, sweats, hoodie. And I started, it was about 108 that day. So I just started doing laps around the casino until I made weight.
How did they make you cut that weight? You just took the fight on 12 hours.
I don't know, man, because they're dickheads and they probably set me up. They probably obviously wanted Robbie to win. I'm just some goober from Washington at this point.
Oh.
Right?
That hurts. That fucking hurts.
Yeah, fuck it. It's history, right? It's stories.
Yeah.
I can tell my grandkids about it. I'm not hurt. I'm not butthurt about it. I made the choice to do it. So.
Well, yeah. And you know, when you're watching Robbie on TV shortly after this, you know, winning world titles much longer after that, you say, yeah, I fought him. I was winning the entire fight until I got hit.
Yeah. Until I walked and followed him a little bit. And fucking
15 seconds. The 15 second fight. You know what I mean?
14. Right? 14. Gave me credit.
Sorry.
There.
Sorry.
Get it straight, man.
I won every second of that fight until I didn't.
I had no clue who I was up against. And he was actually puking before we went out there. He was so nervous.
And I was southpaw. Like, oh, kid.
Huh?
And a southpaw.
And a southpaw, which I didn't know. So I hop in the cage. I'm like, ah, okay, he's ripped, a little kid, whatever, he's cool. And then he starts circling away. And instead of cutting him off, I try chasing him down. Right? Because it's my first pro fight. I didn't train for shit. I took the fight on 12 hours notice. It's not like I thought of any prep or anything. Nor was I even in awesome shape. Anyway, so I tried to chase him down. And I planted. He planted. I threw a kick. He threw his right. His punch hit. My leg kick did not hit. If I would have known he was that good of a striker, I probably would have set the kick up. But it is what it is. Fucking woke up. Doctor in my face. I'm like, fuck. And I'm trying, you know, I think I came to and I was like trying to grab shit. And he's like, oh, don't move, don't move. I'm like, what? I go, what the fuck? He goes, you got knocked out. I go, what? He goes, yeah, you got knocked out and you had like a little mini seizure. Don't move. I'm like, what? Apparently he hit me and I fell straight back with my head on the cage and my toes were seizuring out or some shit. I was like, oh, kid must have hit me hard, huh?
Holy fuck. Did you drive home from there or did
Sure did.
Oh,
well, it turns out, well, I'll get to that in a second. So then after that, I'm like, well, that was bullshit. That was stupid. Then they tell me there's a after fight party down the road in Chico. So I was like, yeah, fuck, I'm here. Let's go party. So my buddy and I head over to the fight party. What? You can grab shit. It's okay. I go into the party and I'm, you know, Frank Shamrock and Don Fry and all these guys are there and I'm kind of just chilling.
Wait, hold up. Right there, this guy right here is about to blow through every single penny he just earned. Don Fry at a bar? Yeah. Oh, fuck. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't even really talk to him. The only one I saw that kind of agitated me that I thought, well, I'm a douche, but, you know, whatever. It was Frank, you know. He's okay. Running around with a Hawaiian shirt with some fucking Mai Tai with a flower or one of the little umbrella things in there with a shirt on buttons. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? But whatever. I guess he likes himself.
Huh. You
know, one guy in there with his shirt open. Right. Oh, but anyways, I decided, I'm like, you know what? This is lame. I'm fucking out of here. Got my ass kicked by a fucking kid. This is bullshit. So as I'm leaving, Robbie's out there in front of the bar. He's like, hey, man, can you go in and get Pat? I go, why don't you fucking go in? He's like, because I'm 19. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, ah, fuck. I go in. Robbie's waiting for you. I'm fucking leaving.
That makes it worse.
And I was like, he's a fucking kid, dude. And he just laid me out. And I said, that's it. And I grabbed my shit and left. I drove home, you know. And then I get home and Charlie's like, how'd it go? I'm like, not so well. I go, I got knocked out in 14 seconds. He's like, what the fuck? And then he thought about it and he goes, how did you feel going into that fight? I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, you just had a war 2 weeks prior to that. And he goes, he's like, so how was your head feeling? I go, I don't know. I go, I felt a little nauseous and sick going into this fight. And he goes, oh, did you? And he goes, any dizziness? I go, yeah, I just thought I had like a flu or a bug. He goes, no, you had a concussion. I go, oh. So I stepped in there and I fought Robbie with a concussion. Not being an athlete, didn't know. So let's say after that fight, it took a little bit of break to heal the head.
Yeah, you know.
And the break for me was like 4 months, 5 months.
Well, here. I mean, in the reality of the situation is you got to treat a concussion like you would a bone break. And running, jogging, wrestling, all that does is it doesn't allow it to heal. And you'll see guys get knocked out and like think that they're taking a break because it's just they're not sparring. And every single time they get touched, like their chin was just never the same again.
Yeah. It's definitely taking shots like that. It's like investing, putting money in the bank, you know, slowly but surely gets worse. Well, hopefully it gets better in the bank, but you know what I'm saying?
You've had a few concussions. How are you doing mentally?
It's a little bit. It's definitely a struggle. I've been diagnosed with some stuff that I have to deal with, and it does affect your moods. And concentration. And basically, my doctor says I have CTE, but there's no way to prove it because you have to die. But that I hit every symptom to a T.
Do you use lion's mane, cordyceps, or psilocybin?
I tried microdosing a little bit, but I didn't really give it much of a chance. So that's I might want to
That's too bad.
Yeah. It's frustrating. It gets really frustrating. My wife sometimes gets irritated because I forget shit all the time, but I'm like, I can't fucking help it. You know, you can yell at me and be as pissed as you want. It won't change the fact I can't help it.
You know, do you have brain fog at all?
Meaning?
Like, are you just cloudy heads?
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of, it fucks with your mood swings too. Cause it's like, in a way, kind of like being bipolar. Like, some days I wake up really high. Some days I wake up really low, you know, and then, you know, and sometimes it lasts for a couple months. Sometimes it'll last one day. It just really depends. I don't know. You can't really control it. So I definitely take meds to try to control it. And I asked my doc, well, what do I do? There's nothing you can do. Stay as healthy as possible. You know, work out, live your life, take your meds. That's about all you can do. So I was like, all right, here we go.
Yeah. December 1st, 2001, Rumble in the Ring. Eric Weisman is the promoter. What's your dealings been like with him?
Fuck Eric Weisman. Oh. There you go. So Eric and I were training partners for many, many years. I pretty much saved his show a million times. I pretty much did everything him and Charlie told me to. They said, you can't work with these guys. I wouldn't work with these guys. They wanted me to blackball these guys. And, you know, I was like a little puppet. I did everything I was told, whether it was blackball these guys, tell them to fuck off, whatever. If they told me to do it, I'd do it. My loyalty is unsettled. If I'm loyal to you, I'll die for you. So that's how my loyalty is. So that's why, you know, don't work with these guys. They can fuck off. So I wouldn't work. Don't talk to these people from this gym, whatever. So I just listened. Eric and I have always kind of had beef a little bit, not like beef, but we have strong, you know, we have strong personalities, and he's a dick. You know, he thrives on being an asshole. And there were times where we would get into it all the time at the gym. Charlie kicked me out a couple times because I was going to rip his head off. You know, one instance I was getting the fight going to Atlantic City that following Wednesday, whatever day it was. The day before I was leaving, Charlie goes, grapple with Eric. I go, I don't want to fucking grapple with Eric. He's a dick. And I have a fight in a couple days and my neck's fucked up. And he goes, just grapple with him. He'll be fine. And so, Eric, don't be a dick. I'm leaving in 3 days. I have a big fight against a good opponent. Don't fuck with my neck. What's he do? First thing he does, can opener. I just lost my shit. Fucking start freaking out, yelling at him. I got up and start kicking his legs and shit. And I was just like, what a fucking prick. So, I mean, he's a dick. He's just generally a dick.
You know, the falling out? Is it? I mean.
That was it. I just went home and it was, you know, next day it was all good. But that happened a lot with Eric and I. We have really strong personalities and really he's an asshole. So, and in ways I'm an asshole. So it was like, bink, right? But I still was obedient to my team throughout my whole career. And then we've had a recent incident where I almost threw down with them at a grappling tournament, but we can get to that later if we get to it. It's a whole story behind that shit.
Yeah, that's cool. Eric Dahlberg was your opponent. You lost by KO again, but that's got to be kind of scary.
It was TKO.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't scary because at the time, Eric was a phenomenal grappler. He wasn't known for striking. I was mounted, and he was hitting me, but they didn't hurt at all. It felt like having a kid on top of me punching me. So I was trying to get out. I wasn't the best grappler at that point. So the fight was stopped because I couldn't advance position, but I wasn't hurt. And I go, what the fuck did you stop the fight for? I go, he had like a girl. And he's like, well, you were stuck there for a while and you weren't able to get out of mount. I go, but none of those punches even rocked me. And never, you know, I was still young. I just didn't
activity. Yeah.
Okay. And so he goes, dude, you were there too long. You were stuck. I stopped the fight. We weren't going to sit there and watch that shit for an hour. I was like, okay, fair enough. So I go in the back and Eric comes up to me, goes, bro, he goes, I have never mounted somebody and they rock me from being mounted. I go, well, you have now. I go, you're a hell of a grappler. I go, you can't punch worth a shit. I said, but you're a good grappler. And that was that fight. And Eric and I are friends. He's local. He's a phenomenal grappler. Another guy that I think no one really knew of that was a world-class grappler for sure.
Yeah,
under appreciated. Really, he started doing some kickboxing stuff and boxing. He started getting really good. So he's a definitely a different fighter at this point, but we're both retired. So
another name from the Pacific Northwest that we got to mention him, Danny Boy Bennett, kickboxer.
Yes. Yep. Good old Danny Boy. He's a great guy. He actually competed for my promotion a couple years ago. He just called me up and he's like, dude, I got to do one more. I'm like, Danny, we're fucking old, dude. What are you trying to point? He goes, dude, I just want to do one more, man. And he was all over me about it. And I was like, okay, bro, I'll get one more ride. And he wanted to fight Matt Kovacs, who used to be my student, big buff guy, and ended up having a rough fight. But he got that one last. Hopefully that itch is gone now.
Yeah. Sometimes you need that. You need it.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we're going to have the itch till the day we die. You know, we're fighters. It never goes away. You gotta get, you know, a reality happens. Father Time, you can't beat it.
Another tough SOB from that area, Brad Blackburn, IFL. Yes, I mean, he really made a name for himself in the IFL.
Yes. So Brad and I fought as amateurs, and we're friends now. He actually invited me out to go fishing last year. I just couldn't find the time because it was like 3 days. He's like, "Hey, we'll go fishing." I'm like, "Bro, 3 days notice. I have a business." Anyways. Brad's a cool cat. We're friends as well. Our amateur fight went like so. So we were very, very closely matched. We're both strikers. We're both just going at it. The round, apparently. So what happened is he rocked me right at the end of the round. So I shot and I double legged him. But on the double leg, on the way down, he already armbarred me. It was kind of a Matt Hughes, Dennis Holman scenario, right? Weird. He's a Dennis Holman guy. But I ended up getting armbarred. And right when I tapped, the bell rang. I go, oh, my. I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Charlie looks over at me and goes, 1 second, dude. I'm like, well, fuck, I didn't know. He's like, unbelievable. He goes, you know what? That was a tied round, too. That was a 10-10 round. And I go, he goes, 1 second, bro. I go, fuck, I didn't know where. I mean, it rocked me. I shot. He armbarred me. I'm sorry, bro. I didn't know there's 1 second left, but how?
And had you not tapped, he could have held that armbar on for the 3 seconds after the bell, pretending like he didn't hear it.
Right. But no, it was fucking tight. You know, it was on. By the time we hit the mat, it was extended. So I was like, fuck. So the story behind that fight, too, is because we were friends. I was like, all right, loser has to buy drinks. Oh. He goes, all right, cool. I said, all right, Brad, you won the belt. I said, meet me at the bar. He's like, I don't really drink. I said, a deal's a deal. Get your ass to the bar. I go, you won the title. Let's have some drinks. Congratulations. And I go, no, I'm going to get this guy fucked up. I got him so hammered. He messages me the next day. He goes, I'm never fucking drinking again, dude. He goes, I'm so sick. And I go, I won the battle. You won the fight.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the camaraderie in the sport as well. I mean, dude just armbarred me, right? We went and had drinks together.
Yeah, that's actually really cool. He's actually known for his stand-up. Yep. Everyone, like in the IFL, I mean, he got an armbar, so he's got excellent ground. You'd mentioned Dennis Holman guy. But in the IFL, everybody said, no, dude, that guy's got world-class stand-up. Don't be fooled by his record. Yeah.
Oh no. Who, me or him?
No, him. Everyone was saying dangerous.
Brad was a stud. He was a boxer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he boxed my buddy back in the day as an amateur on the amateur card, and they did a boxing match and pretty good match. That's when I knew he was a good striker. You know, he beat my guy. Not my guy, my friend. Excuse me.
Matt Horwich. Did you ever roll with him?
I did. Yeah, there's a story about that, too, because, you know, we all know he's on the spectrum and he's a great guy, but he's not your normal fighter. Let's say that. I'll put it that way. I was at AMC with Charlie. And, you know, there were some people there that day. Josh was there. Tim Sylvia. Michael McDonald.
Oh,
who else was there that day? I don't know. We were all just training. And Matt Horwich was there, obviously. And I'm sitting there and I said, I rolled with Matt. I just like, holy shit. You know, I know he's on the spectrum, so it's pissing me off even more. and I could not even budge that guy. He didn't tap me, but he was just, I was defending the whole fucking time. And we went about 15 minutes and I was exhausted. He goes, you want to keep going? I'm like, no, get away from me. I go sit down on the bench and I'm kind of pouting, like just sitting there. And Charlie goes, what's wrong, Bubba? I'm like, dude, I can't even tap the fucking the special kid. He goes, he is special in a lot of ways. I go, what do you mean? I go, he's a stud. I go, and he goes, you'll see. Now, I was upset because I thought he, you know, he was a little bit on spectrum. So I thought,
yeah, he's just a slow kid. Let me get
slow
him.
Kid. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Slow kid. He's a slow kid. And I've seen him hit pads in the back when we're getting ready for fights. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's wretched. Matt's really going to put that dude in the fight. He goes, Matt knows what he's doing. I'm sure he's got something going on. I'm like, dude, that guy can't even throw a punch. And then he went and fought. I'm like, holy shit, he's a zombie. And he just eats punches. Once he gets a hold of you, good luck.
He and Matt Lindland became like brothers. Like they
I didn't know that.
They were like super close. I mean, you said, hey, Matt Lindland's got a little bit of a funk to him. I mean, I kind of, you know, mentioned it first. But yeah. Matt Horwich also has that reputation.
Yeah. Well, yes. He didn't smell that fresh either.
So I interviewed Matt Horwich.
He's a good guy.
He's homeless by choice.
Right.
He can't imagine spending money on rent when he can stay at a warming center and save up his money to buy a house because rent is stupid. He needs to buy the house outright.
Right.
He goes to the gym to work out and shower. He is one of the most unique human beings has ever walked this friggin' planet, man.
My favorite thing is when he'd whoop your ass and he'd pull his Bible out and say, God loves you.
Dude, I thought it was like a joke. Like, I remember meeting him.
He's legitimately saying, God loves you and keep fighting. You know, it was amazing. I thought it was great.
He'd be walking to the ring, reading a Bible like somebody that's maniacal. I'm like, oh, that's his gimmick, like a pro wrestler.
Ain't no gimmick.
There's no gimmick about it. Welcome to the multiverse, friend.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's so awesome. It's the unique fighters that are my favorite. You know, he's such a character. It was fun. Got to see that guy do some fun stuff, and Benji as well.
Truth be told, the UFC, they took a loss on not having him on the Ultimate Fighter.
I agree. He was a great fighter, underrated.
Yeah, Horwich. Horwich on the Ultimate Fighter?
Horwich.
Oh my God, Horwich on the Ultimate Fighter?
That would have been amazing. That would have been amazing seeing him on there, the characters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you lose four in a row at one point. You know, with Dahlberg, Brad Blackburn, Craig Sloan again. And you take some time off. Well, no, you don't. You ran right up to what, UFCF September 20, 2002.
No, I never take time off.
You didn't at all.
Didn't want it. Fighting demons, not the fighter, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, Steve Perry is your opponent. You win by KO. Miguel Odorate was the matchmaker. How was your dealings with him?
I'm sorry, I was distracted. One more time. Which fight?
Miguel Odorate was the matchmaker for the Steve Perry fight. Did you have any interaction with him, or was he administration?
No, Charlie did all that stuff. He said fight, I fought.
That's it then. Steve McQuarrie, you knock him out, and you go into Matt Stallone.
That's Chill. That was Chill's grappling coach. He was on the Tough Show with him.
Yeah.
He was at that point undefeated, and he was subbing people out in under a minute, and he never made it past like a minute or 2 minutes, I heard. We were getting our vitals checked. I was right behind him. I don't think he knew I was back there, and they're like, who are you fighting? He's like, oh, one of Pearson's karate guys or whatever. He goes, I'll just take him down and sub him. I'm right behind him. I go, you got to get me down first, bud. And then I went out and knocked him out. And retired him even.
Oh, that's humiliating.
Be humble, man. Just get in there and throw down.
I tell you what, that's the fight game, man. It is what it is, man. That's the fight game.
Every fight I was cocky, I lost. All the fights that I shit my pants in, I whooped their ass.
No shit. Oh. Matt Stallone, you beat him by armbar. You run into Craig Sloan. Obviously, we talked about that. And yeah. you run into Jason Ribinette.
Oh, geez, that fucking fight. So first of all, it's a Dennis Hallman card. So we're fighting on a horse track. He puts a ring in the middle of a horse track, covers the dirt with like tarps and shit. And that was the fight. And then this guy, you know, I don't know what the hell he didn't. They just said, go fight this guy. And he's not that great. And just knock him out real quick. We'll give you some extra money. And so I get in there and I'm like, they say go. And then he comes out doing all this awkward shit. And he goes, dude, what the hell happened? You were all professional like you usually are. And then all of a sudden you started doing all this weird shit. And I go, dude, I didn't know how to fight the guy. He was weird. Shit was coming from weird angles. And then Charlie goes, what the fuck are you doing? Knock him out. And then I kneed him in the face and dropped him. That was it. But the funny thing is I started doing what he was doing because it was so freaking awkward. But it wasn't a long fight. When he said knock him out, I finally just clinched him and kneed him, and that was done. But Charlie goes, what the fuck are you doing? And I go, dude, I don't know. It was weird. It's just a weird experience.
You knock him out. That's May 24th, July 12th, 2003. Drew Ficken is your opponent. Let's talk about the pre-fight antics. I've never had a Drew Ficken fight discussed without something completely bizarre also coming into fold.
Nah, nothing too bizarre. Something kind of funny, though. So we're at weigh-ins. I'm a little over still, and Drew makes weight. And I'm like, fuck, man, I don't have a jump rope. I don't have any of this shit. And him with a big smile comes up, and he goes, no problem, bro. You can use mine. I go, cool, thanks, bud. I make weight. You know, I use his rope. He thought he was just super cocky. And we're out. I hit full contact fighters interviewing him, and I'm within ear's length of him. And, you know, same thing. I'm just the karate kid. Charlie Pearson, some karate kid. I'm like, all right, fucker. You know, I heard that. And then in the back room, I'm getting ready and I'm hitting pads. And Charlie's like, how do you feel? I'm like, I'm fucking exhausted. He goes, perfect. Let's go fight. I was kind of a slow starter. So Charlie would do about a 20-minute full workout in the back, get me to drop and get that anxiety out and, you know, get that first adrenaline dump out before I even go out there. So I'm on my second workout when I'm going out to fight.
That's actually smart.
Yeah. Gets me completely tired and exhausted. So by the time I walk out there, my second win kicks in.
Yeah, you got about 7-minute window right there. You know, 5 to 7 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, here's a couple minutes. Take a couple minutes. Okay, now we're going to go out. And he goes, and I didn't know who I was fighting because I never questioned it. I fight whoever the fuck he put in front of me.
You didn't even look him up?
No.
All right. So Drew Ficken, if you were to subtract alcohol from that guy's life, he would have been a world champion. He absolutely had all the tools, checked all 100%. The boxes. And 100%. Anybody that ever went with him in a room, like in a practice room, all of them, even the most special of athletes, come back going, wow, I don't know what that is. That guy is a world-class talent, not generational talent, you know, but world-class talent. Like, he is in that top three. Like, Drew Ficken's a fucking savage, but he drinks.
Yes. And that was his problem. But anyway, so I had no clue what the hell he was. I just knew he was an opponent. And then Charlie, right before we go out, oh yeah, he goes, oh yeah, you're a warm-up fight for him to get back in the UFC. I go, what? He goes, yeah, he's like 20-1. I'm like, oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me. So he loved to get me scared. Yeah, it's I'm true. Like, what the fuck? I'm 3-3, right? Fuck, dude. I'm 3-3, and I didn't know I was fighting this UFC stud until I started walking out. And he goes, oh, yeah, by the way, you're a stepping stone warm-up fight. Drew's trying to get back in the UFC. I'm like, I just start gagging. I'm like, okay, fucker. You know, walking out, I'm like so nervous. Then I get in the ring and just stuck to what I know, try to strike. And he was such a good wrestler that he took me down really easy. And then he armbarred me. He got an armbar really quick. And then I just refused to tap to it. I mean, he had it. It was popping. But at this point, I was like, fuck this. So he had me in the armbar. I lifted him up and just started bouncing his head off the mat.
I couldn't find the fight. Did he ever have your back at any point during the fight?
No. He mounted me and he got an armbar.
His ability, like, even the most world-class grapplers on the Brazilian side, he's embarrassed them on the ground with the same move. It's a move you know is coming. And it's always an armbar, you know, a slick back take, and he just slides to the mount real easy as well.
He slid right to the mount, got that armbar quick, extended it. I was just being super stubborn. I got up on my feet and just started shaking him off my arm, bouncing his head off, and then he slipped off of the arm. So I backed up. He stood back up, and then he shot and took me down again. But he was not being careful, and I slapped the triangle on, locked her up and underhooked and got a good angle on it, and that was it. Three minutes.
Dude, this is a fight that haunted him.
I know. I heard about it.
It haunted him.
Oh, yeah. He tried to rematch me like 50 times.
We're not just talking like, I want to rematch 50 times. It's, I'll pay to fight him. Yeah. Like, I'll pay to fight him. Like, it's different than a rematch.
Yeah. I take that as a compliment.
Oh, my God, dude. That's a guy that can't look at himself in the mirror without being pissed. Yeah. So, like, at our podcast, we kind of go back and forth. We talk to you about your fights and what your feelings. But oftentimes, we get perspectives from the guys that fought other people, like the same guys. So we kind of got to get both sides. So with Drew Fickett, with Dennis Hallman, when they fought, Drew beat Dennis Hallman. Oh, yeah, Drew beat Dennis Hallman.
Yep.
Yeah. Dennis was like, dude, we knew he was a partier. So we went drinking with him after weigh-ins. And he's like, I was drinking water in a beer can. And Drew probably drank $200 worth of booze. And he was drinking till like 3 a.m. I tapped out. My buddy stayed there, and they kept him drinking. They even sent a couple hookers to his room.
He still beat him.
And he still beat me. So when we interview Fickett, he goes, and those guys were the greatest guys in the world. Like, I invited Hallman to my wedding because we
found that's hilarious.
So much. You know, he gave me so much beer, sent some chicks up to the room. It was the greatest promotion I've ever fought in. And, you know, I fought all over the world.
That's just his tactic. That's Dennis's tactic. Dennis was a clown, dude. He did all kinds of crazy shit. That's his tactic. I trained with Dennis too, because we were in the same weight class. You know, and he came up and trained with us sometimes at Charlie's. And Charlie's like, be careful. You guys are in the same weight class. And he's a smart motherfucker. He goes, he's probably trying to pick you apart right now. He's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we interviewed Aaron Riley and or Jeff Monson, actually. It was Jeff Monson. When we interviewed Jeff Monson, we had talked about like Dennis Hallman and Matt Hume, and did Matt really, you know, have that rite of passage moment with Hallman? And Jeff Monson said, no, he did that with everybody except Hallman, because Hallman was Hume's favorite pupil ever. You could show him a move one time, and like within 5 minutes, he's perfecting it, and he can pull it off in a fight. He's just got that like photographic memory.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Dennis, so my dumb ass, not realizing that MMA math doesn't work, I beat Drew. So the first thing I did was, Dennis, let's fight.
That's exactly what you don't want.
Right. But, you know, I just beat Drew Fickett. I'm on a little bit of a high. He lost to Drew Fickett. I've trained with him. We've partied together. We know each other really well. So I fucking called him out. He goes, come on, show. I go, fuck you, Dennis. Let's fight. You lost to Drew. I beat Drew.
He's like, well, let's put that on pause a little bit. We'll get to it, because you beat Drew Fickett. Your next fight is April 23rd, 2003 in Sport Fight against Chris Leben.
Oh, yeah. Well, that fight, 3 days notice, up a weight class. I was naturally a welterweight.
He's got cinder blocks for hands as well, and giant bear paws. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So I took that fight. Again, I'm at home. This time I was actually at home, a little overweight. hadn't been training that hard, hurt my knee. I was at home drinking a beer, icing up my knee, and Charlie gives me a call. He goes, hey, man, you want to fight Chris Leben? I'm like, yeah, I'll fight Chris. He's like, I go, when? He's like, Saturday. I go, it's fucking Wednesday, dude. And he goes, well, do you want to fight him? I said, yeah, I guess I'll do it. He goes, good, because I already accepted it. I'm like, oh, well, fantastic. He goes, so put your beer down, put your eyes down, get your ass to the gym and start cutting weight. Because I was like 205. I had to get down to 85. So I had 3 days to do it. So I cut the weight, get to the venue. I don't fucking know who Chris Leben is. It's like, whatever. He's a fighter. I just knew that he was the up-and-coming Oregon guy, you know, big tough guy. So we start fighting, and man, we just start going at it. He's a striker. I'm a striker. We just start trading, kneeing each other, stomping each other's feet, fucking everything. And we had just a 3-round fucking war that actually went into overtime. There's an overtime in the fight. They just made that shit up on the fly. You know, we had a war. The only reason why I lost that fight was he took me down more than I took him down. He was tricking me because I was trying to hit that big ass red head, and he kept sticking his head to the side, so I'd knee it. And then when he realized that every time he put his head to the side, I'd throw a knee to the head, he started scooping my leg and getting me down. And then Charlie's like, he's doing that shit on purpose. I go, I know, I can't help it. His head's right there. But most of the fight was just back and forth. If he took me down, we were just striking. I finally got him down in the 3rd round, put him on his back and started beating him in the face and broke his nose and had him spitting blood. At the end of the day, they added some 2-minute overtime bullshit on the fly because obviously they were confused on what to do at this point. So Chris and I are both like fucking exhausted. We're done. We think the fight's over. And then they go, 2-minute overtime. And I'm,
that's Matt Lindland. That's some Matt Lindland shit right there. That's what that is.
It was his show. It was his show. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? 2-minute overtime. I look over at Chris and Chris is like, takes a deep breath. And then I was like, all right, here we go. And then say ding, ding. And then we just met in the middle of the ring again. And then for this time, he just put me in the ropes, stomped my feet and kept my back on the ropes. And I ended up losing a close decision.
A draw is a draw. But
you know,
it happens and it's their show. You got to just count that as a win.
Yeah, it's whatever. I wasn't going to win that fight unless I knocked him out. But I ate every single punch, nothing. I threw every single punch at him, nothing. You know, at one point in the fight, we were just trading. I dropped my hands, stuck my face out, stuck my tongue at him, and I cracked him in the face. And we had an absolute war. It was a blast. It was one of my favorite fights of my career.
So online, after this, I mean, for about 6 months, everybody was talking about it. And ladies and gentlemen, mixedmartialarts.com, go to the Underground Forum. It's phenomenal. Like you can actually see the log still in regards
to some people thought I won, but you know,
you can read it online. There's people in real time at that moment that said you won. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I damaged the shit out of them. He took me down more, I guess. You know,
were you surprised?
For their world title.
It's a world title. Yeah, the sport fight world title of Oregon.
World title.
All of Oregon. Yeah, right. It's the Oregon world title.
World titles are silly, man. They're fucking silly.
Were you surprised with him on The Ultimate Fighter Season 1, all the antics and kind of circus atmosphere that he brought to the show?
No, Chris and I became really good friends after that, and I experienced all that in real life.
So you were not surprised. You knew it was going to be a circus.
100%. Absolutely. That's Chris. Or was Chris. He's not that way anymore.
Yeah, he's sober now. Yeah, he's sober now.
So proud of him. We're good friends. I'm actually bringing him up to my first MMA promotion in August. I'm bringing him, flying him up and paying him a couple, some cash, and he's going to be there for autographs and all that.
That's cool, dude. All right, give it a plug.
Oh, absolutely. So August 10th in Arlington, Washington at Angel of the Winds Casino. We've done 9 Pro-Am kickboxing events there. And we're doing our 10th one in June 22nd. And that's purely kickboxing. And then August 10th is our MMA show, our first one. And we're going to bring it old school. I'm bringing back a ring. I'm not using a cage. you know, and I'm bringing him up for that. So it's basically, it's going to be called War MMA. We're going to rebrand since we have two types of fighting now. We're going to brand it and call it War Championships after this last kickboxing show. And then we're just going to stagger events every few months, kickboxing, MMA, giving the North guys a good solid pro-am show that's on pay-per-view, which if you guys want to watch is on millions.co/war for either of the shows. June 22nd is all kickboxing and August 10th is all MMA, old school in the ring.
Yeah, it's awesome, yeah. Dude. February 27, 2004, you make the trip down to Florida. Dan Lambert's event, Absolute Fighting Championship. You've got your first international opponent, Joakim Enberg from Shooters International, Gothenburg, Sweden.
Yeah, that was fun. It was a good time. That promotion was interesting. They're kind of tricky. So they were doing two round fights.
In you know, just so everybody understands, this is pre Ultimate Fighter. So this is when there was absolutely no money in the sport. Two-round fights, which meant draws, meant you didn't have to pay the win bonus.
Correct. That's a trick that the promoter did. So there was like four draws that night.
Convenient.
So anyways, I go to Florida, cutting weight. You know, Charlie's always fun to cut weight with. He likes to fuck with me. I was jogging on the a treadmill with a sauna suit on, cutting weight. And he jumps in. He goes, "I'll be right back." Comes back with pizza and a My Cards lemonade and sits there and goes, "Hurry up." Starts walking, "Hurry up," as he's drinking and eating. "Go, you're such a dick." He goes, "I'm not the one fighting. You want to fight? You deal with it." He goes, "I'm not going to fucking starve just because you're fighting." I'm like, all right. So that's the kind of shit I came up with. Made weight, first round. At the time, Joakim was ranked number two in the country in Sweden as a welterweight. He was, I don't know. I want to say he was like, he had a pretty good record, bigger than mine. Anyways, well, you have to have a decent record to be the second ranked guy in their country. So anyways, first round, he was more of a grappler. So he took me down, kind of controlled me on the ground. Second round, I came out firing, you know, punching him, kicking him. You know, he went to his back, started kicking his legs and tried to avoid the ground at all costs and cut him. I cut him in the second round. I definitely won that. I thought 10-8, but obviously they were trying to save money. So it was a draw.
That's fantastic.
Anyway, it's a fucking draw.
They flew in from Sweden, so you know they're not paying. Yeah, you know they're not paying them.
He got paid the same as me. And we're young fighters. We don't know. I've never experienced this. I go, "What the fuck do they do with a draw?" He goes, "I don't know." I go, "Do we split the purse or do we just get our show up money?" He's like, "I don't know."
In theory, you're supposed to split the fight purse. The fight
you would think, right?
Yeah, in theory.
Yeah, in theory, that's what more of my head went. So Joakim goes in there. I go, "Did you get any extra money?" He goes, "No." Like, what the fuck, man? Then I go in there and I go, "How much you get paid?" He goes, "Not that much. I got $500. I got $500. I came from Washington, 5-hour flight. He came from Sweden for $500.
Yeah, no, dude.
That's bullshit. Dude, we got paid nothing, dude. You want to know how much I made fighting Chris?
How much?
$300.
Oh, you fuck Chris Lieben for $300. Did you have to get stitches?
No, I came out unscathed. Not a scratch on me.
Oh, you know there was hospital bills on his end because I read about the blood.
You read any of the, his face is fucked up. He was spitting blood. His face is all swollen up. He told me, I think I recall him saying I broke his orbital. You know, I upkicked him and smashed his face in.
Wow.
He tried doing some spin move on me and I threw an upkick, but it didn't faze him.
So I took an EMT course thinking I wanted to be a fireman one day. Never worked a day like for the EMT or the fire department. And I'd be at these events and I'd have to super glue wounds shut because they just didn't want to spend $150 that they made. They didn't want to spend any of that on stitches. So right. I'd be pretending like I knew what I was doing. Okay, I'm just going to pinch it, glue it.
Glue it. I do that now. I do that now. My students will bust their eye open. I'm like, lay down. I have videos of me doing it and shit. And the best videos is when I drain their ears. That's good stuff.
I'm a professional. Don't do this at home. That's the video.
For real, dude. I've done it a lot of times. And people are like, you do your own ears? I'm like, yeah. Go to a fucking hospital. It costs you $1,000 to have them drain it and put a cotton swab on your ear.
Yeah. Worst case scenario, it gets infected. Antibiotics are a lot cheaper than a $1,000 procedure.
Right. It's silly. And it's not even a procedure. You're a diabetic and you don't suck it out.
Yeah, you suck it out. All right. So check out this run. Drew Fickett, Chris Leven, Joachim Enberg, Dennis Hallman. That's four. There's your four opponents.
Yes.
And then after that, we won't get to that. Let's just talk about Dennis Hallman. I cut you off.
Fucking Dennis. Yeah. No, we're again, I got to stop fighting my friends because I can't get mad. Right. I don't take it too serious. So with the Hallman fight, I called him out. He accepted, obviously. He was having trouble making weight. I'm not going to say shit about that. We fought up at 185 so we could make 186. And he's like, come on, show. Come on, let me just have a couple. I go, fuck you, Dennis. I'm a welterweight. I go, you're going to cut all the weight. He's like, come on, what's the difference? I'm like, cut the weight. I go, I made weight. You cut the fucking weight. And so the next day we get in the ring and Dennis flies from half across all the way across the ring, takes me down. We clinch up. We had a little bit of an exchange on our feet, but not very long until he took me down. As soon as I clinched up with that guy, dude, he was strong as shit. I was like, what the fuck? And then he took me down. And at that point, I'm on my back trying to keep myself from getting subbed out or whatever. And I go to a position, what I call kind of a knee guard position, action guard, whatever. You get to your side and you're blocking with your knee on the top and the bottom. And then I just come in there and push his face and knee him in the face. And he looks up at me and goes, that's illegal. I go, I don't fucking care. Do it again. And then after the fight, he does this thing called the hopscotch. He showed me after he beat me with it. And it's when he just sits on you and then you go to scoop underneath his legs and he triangles you. And Charlie's yelling, he's going to triangle you. I'm like, I know what he's doing, that hopscotch shit. Didn't take it serious. He locked it on. I go, oh, fuck. You got to be kidding me. I'm like, I'm not getting out of this shit. So I tapped, and he beat me by triangle. So I triangle Drew Fickett. Drew Fickett beats Dennis by decision. Dennis triangles me. So funny. MMA math doesn't work.
I really wish that Dennis Hallman, as a grappler, I know he was an ADCC in 2005.
I
wish he was given more grappling opportunities, because I think if he would have adjusted to their rule set and stuff like that, I think he really would have been special.
Dude, he was special. That guy was, he fought for the UFC title, back in the day. I mean,
On the grappling side. I 100% stand corrected on that statement.
The grappling side, we didn't have the opportunity back then. It's not like
no.
There was nothing to do. If you did a grappling tournament, it was at some gym.
I think this guy shows up at the Pan Ams, eight early ADCCs. And that guy's walking out of there with his hand raised. He's a freaking master.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Dennis just liked to party too much. He was his own worst enemy.
Did you ever get caught up in any of his hijinks, any of his pranks?
Almost. So after we fought, I was so mad and upset with myself because I completely, I'm not taking anything away from him, but I was very arrogant going into that fight, knowing that he's my buddy and we've rolled and we've done these things. And I'm like, yeah, fuck, I know what Dennis is going to do. He's going to try to sub me. And even though he did. So I just came in there too cocky and got caught. So it is what it is. So after I got hammered, and then as soon as you get drunk, all this stupid shit starts coming out. Right. I'm trying to. So I end up at the point where I'm going to skip all the BS in between. At the end of the night, I'm taking a piss. Dennis comes up next to me and starts pissing next to me. And I'm crying and shit like a little bitch. So funny. And I laugh at it now. You know how fighters get drunk, get emotional.
Yeah. They just want to
But I'm taking a piss, and he pulls his dick out, looks at me, goes, "Show, it's all good. Just so you know, I was more afraid of you than Frank Trigg. I trained twice as hard." Pass me on the back and leaves. Like, fuck you, Dennis. He goes back out to the bar. I keep continuing to drink. And by the time, at the end of the day, I pranked him. I went up to his hotel room. There's a picture of me diving through his window. And we went in there and got all their Victory Athletic shit, put it in the in the toilet, put it all, in the tub and all that shit. And then we bail. And then Dennis gets back from the bar and calls Charlie, goes, "Charlie, who do I have to kill?" And he goes, "You know damn well who did that." And he goes, "That's what I thought. He's the only one fucking crazy enough to fuck with me." I'm like, "Fuck you," in the background. "Fuck you, Dennis." And he goes, "Just tell Landon, payback's your bitch." And I was like,
I would not want to be on the receiving end of that.
And it was so funny. And then that night, I was being a dumbass. I got choked out by my teammates a few times. And then that's that. He never got me back. He came up a few times. I think he tried one time. Apparently he came to my gym, but one of my students were there, so he took off. I think he was going to try to get to the gym and fuck with my stuff because he's known for that kind of shit. Okay. I'm pretty sure he put Jeff Munson's couch on his roof or some shit, I heard.
One of our beginning interviews, we talked to Aaron Riley. Like, Aaron Riley's an absolute savage.
He's awesome.
Traded some of the greatest gyms in the world. And at the end of the interview, I just throw Dennis Hallman's name. We're like almost 2 hours in. He goes on for about another hour just on Dennis Hallman and Jeff Monson. Just the craziness of stealing the driver's seat out of Monson's car and putting his cat on a roof and, taking pictures of him pissing on his toothbrush, so when he develops his film, he sees it, like months later. Yeah,
we were a bunch of knuckleheads back then.
And when we interviewed Monson said, went play by play, absolutely happened. And then we're like, "Jeff, did you ever like want to beat the fuck out of him?" "No, man, it was actually really funny. It was like, it was like horrendous shit. Like, it caused him a divorce."
"Oh, really?"
"He caused Monson a divorce." And Monson's like, "Yeah, but it was still pretty good stuff. I mean,
he just
couldn't get it."
That's funny. Yeah, it's been, I feel blessed and I'm glad I was in that generation, even though there was no money. We had some fun, wild times back then that you can't get away with these days. You don't get the same experiences.
Well, I tell you, your school's got a phenomenal reputation. Your reputation in the locker room amongst your peers couldn't be higher.
Yeah.
And if you look at your record, it's like about a 500 record, but with an absolute savagery of opponents. Matt Lidland's your next opponent.
Yeah. Again, it was supposed to be JT Taylor. And that's why I got that fight, was JT did some, one second. Where were we at? I'm sorry. I kind of lost track.
Matt Lidland. Yeah. JT Taylor pulled off.
Oh yeah. JT Taylor pulled out. So again, I took that on about 4 or 5 days notice. Show up to the venue. I was actually really, really energetic and really amped for that fight because I basically had nothing to lose. And he was a huge name. And I was just like, if I find that chin, he's going to sleep, because he does not have that good of a chin. And I go, all I got to do is touch that chin once, and I put him to sleep. So that was the whole goal, obviously. But in that fight, it says that I lost in the first round. Incorrect. But that's because Matt Lindland's the promoter, so he's turning in the paperwork for the records. Right? So I get through the first round, rough round. Yes, I'm getting my ass kicked. So I look at Charlie in between the corner. I go, fuck, man, this guy's fucking tough. I go, I'm getting my ass whooped. He goes, yeah, it's Matt Lindland. I go, fuck it, dude. I'm just flying knee. He goes, yeah, fuck, do whatever you want. He goes, you're supposed to lose anyways. Go out there and try to catch him. So I run out there and try to catch him with a flying knee. He catches me midair. I'm like, oh, just flying. He takes me down, starts punching me. In the second round, about 2.5 minutes in, so probably halfway through the round, I go for a heel hook, and then he starts punching me. So that doesn't work out. And then he spikes me 12-6 because I could hear him getting frustrated because I'm supposed to be a walkthrough fight, right? And he's and actually having a fight.
And you're not going away. Yeah, you're not going away. And you took it last minute. Here, let's recap. I heard you took this on hours notice.
I can't remember. It was short. I don't know. No, I would say, was it that short?
Wow. I'm going to tell you what I read. I'm going to tell you, and I made a lot of phone calls in regards to this. I have a few contacts in that area. And in essence, I was told, I don't know if this is true or not, I'm just going to confirm it, at weigh-ins, because JT and Lindland, they just were like... They hate each other. And Lindland would say little tiny things that would set JT off, as we had discussed earlier. And I heard at weigh-ins, he goes, fuck you, fuck your show, I ain't coming, fuck you. Like, that was
pretty much like that. Message. So it wasn't 1 hour's notice. I got a call that night. And
it was like... Yeah, day of weigh-ins. I mean, Linda's fought up to 205. So
I know. I just didn't care, dude. I just wanted to fight. I wanted to fight the best in the world. And if I lost, I lost.
Okay. We started with Thicket. We were up to Lindland.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Bruno is your next opponent. This is the first time I got to see you fight live. It was March 4th, 2006.
Oh, you saw that?
Of course. MFC Boardwalk, Steve Bruno, fucking war.
Yeah. Ah, that was so tired in that fight, too. I was exhausted in that fight. I had a really bad weight cut. There's a whole story with that shit, too. Everyone that was fighting on that card bet against me that I wouldn't make weight. They were literally betting.
All right. So if you look at my notes, right there, I remember you having to go back to the scale a second or third time.
Yeah, it was rough, dude. So coming into that fight, I don't know what happened. My scale was a piece of shit, when I flew over to Asia to fight, I retained water on the plane, you know. Like, so I don't know if it was some water retention or what, but I thought I was about 5 pounds lighter. I thought I was going to have to cut 10 pounds, which is a pretty easy cut overall. I mean, it sucks, but it's doable. So it turns out I'm heavy. I got to cut 15 pounds. It's about 6 hours to weigh-ins. So I'm in a sauna suit back in the day.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We were dumb and didn't know how unhealthy and how unsafe it is to cut with a sauna suit on. So I throw on a sauna suit, throw on a hoodie, sweats, tape my bottom down, socks, you know, the whole deal, beanie. And I'm cutting all the weight. And I'm just, it's so bad that I'm like passing out. And Charlie's pulling me out of the sauna and dripping a little water, giving me like 30 seconds, puts me back in.
And so I was on the administrative side for this one. I remember the hotel calling us with concerns about you in the sauna.
Yeah. Yep, it's pretty bad. It was such a bad cut that even after I made weight, I couldn't hold water down. I couldn't hold any food down. I literally did not hydrate till the morning of the fight.
They thought there was going to be canceled because of it. Yeah.
It was close.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so bad that I guess I was going walking through the Tropicana and it was an open, you know, public weigh-ins. And Charlie said that I don't remember because I was so delirious and he was basically carrying me to the scale. This was coming back the second time. I'm like, I'm fucking dying. I'm not going to make weight. And he's like, dude, you're going to flip. You're fine. Just chill out and I'll carry you there. You know, just shut up. And I just started stripping all my clothes off. Walking through he goes, dude, we're in the casino. Keep your clothes on. He's like, I don't fucking care. Get me on the scale. I'm dying. He goes, by the time you got there, you're naked. And I'm like, well, I had to get naked to make weight anyway. And he's like, you know, this is a public weigh-in, right? I'm like, yeah. And then he's like, and I'm like, so? And he's like, you're Asian. I'm like, at this point, I don't give a fuck. Yeah, I'm half white, asshole. You know, but there's a point where I was literally, I was laying on the floor in the casino, refusing to get up. I mean,
Landon, I can't tell you how many phone calls we got in regards to this from... this was the end of public weigh-ins at the casino.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is for the MFC. It killed it. Yes. Yeah.
Because of me? That's a compliment. I love it.
Yeah. It was
so that being said, I could not fucking rehydrate. I went back to the room and all night long I was like ice cubing it because every time I got a little bit of fluid in me, I chucked it up. So finally I went to breakfast and I could hold the shit down. You know, I got to fight that day. So I'm rehydrating the day of the fight.
At 10 a.m. we found out that the fight was on. We thought I know Bruno's camp. Steve Bruno, original Lions Den member, living with the American Top Team in Coconut Creek at this time. Yeah. Refused an interview with us. Absolute no on the interview request from Steve Bruno. But that's neither here nor there, Landon. We got you here. So that's Steve Bruno, you got his pissed. Ass. You got his ass.
Yeah, he's still pissed then, right? Was this recent that you asked for an interview?
Yeah, it was like about a year ago. Yeah. like absolute no. Everything I've got to say is online. I don't need to talk to you. Like, oh, okay. Well, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Yeah, what a nice guy. Cool. Way to take that loss like a man.
Right, I don't say afterward.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, if you see this, you're a bitch.
No. I'm not cutting that out. I go to Florida a lot. That will not be clipped. That will not be clipped out.
Well, take it like a man. Shit happens.
Pete Sell, that's your next fight. After Steve Bruno. Wait. Steve Bruno, absolute war. Fight of the night. Fucking like we got to see I got to see what was referred to as a gatekeeper journeyman from the toughest region of the entire world come to Atlantic City and fight an A-list guy that they're grooming for the UFC of which he made.
Hey, bud.
That's what I got to see that night.
Yeah,
that's what we got to see. Yeah, that's what we got to see that night. A guy being groomed for the UFC. A rugged fucking gatekeeper from the Pacific Northwest comes and fucks his day up.
Yep. Him and Drew don't like me very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up winning that decision. You saw it. And the problem is I think I would have finished him, but I was so tired from the very, I was completely exhausted in that fight. I had no finishing strength. I had enough experience and knowledge to know how to stay in control. And because I tried to go for that Americana, I just couldn't fucking finish it because I didn't have the strength.
I didn't think you were going to make it past the third round. We were all going, there's no way he can keep this up, especially going into that third round.
Just all stubborn. I'm just a stubborn motherfucker.
And I tell you, you learn a lot about yourself when you're tired.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole reason why I'm like that, but that's my whole upbringing as a child. That would take forever. No, let's put it this way. When I went to therapy, I asked my counselor said, I self-punish myself because that's what I'm used to. And so she goes, you enjoy getting hit. I go, I fucking do. I love it. She goes, yeah, that's your subconscious. You think you need to be punished or something.
Ugh.
I'm like, really? I don't think of it that way. I just love to fight. She goes, it's all subconscious from your upbringing.
I believe that.
I guess I was just fighting my own demons in there.
Your next opponent, Pete Sell. another UFC.
3 days notice. Up the weight class.
Up the weight class. In his hometown. Yeah. Well, not his hometown, but for Sven Bean. Pete Sell is an East Coaster, but they got a deal worked out with in Colorado with Ring of Combat. So you got Pete Sell, dude.
Yeah. Fun fight. Great guy. He's a really cool cat, you know. I took the fight, obviously, because someone else punked out. And one thing I was born with was very stubborn and have big balls. I don't give a fuck. So I took that fight on a few days' notice, too. And again, I'm a natural welterweight, not a middleweight, but I just got these opportunities. I couldn't pass them. And so I took that fight, flew out there. I was heavier than I thought. And then made weight, but it was same day weigh-ins. The same day weigh-ins. And so I get there and I'm a welterweight. So I get on there. I'm a little chubby, you know, a little web handle going on. And I get on there and Pete comes in just sucked out. I'm like, oh my God, he's going to be fucking huge. And then because I was like, dude, he's so sucked out. He's going to be a monster. So we get into the ring and I look across. I'm like, oh, fuck. This guy's huge. And I know he hits like a mofo because that's what he's known for. I saw him fight in the UFC and all that good stuff. So I'm just like, fuck it. Put your balls on. Go out there and do what you do. So first round was kind of rough because I didn't train. I only saw him fight a couple times. Didn't really know his style, boxer and jiu-jitsu guy. But so I lost the first round. We're just, I lost the first two rounds. I was just trying to figure the guy out. After the first round, he got me in a Kimura triangle situation. And so I just held on to my shorts and talked a little smack to him to distract him while he's punching me to get through the round. And it worked. I got through the round. Had I eat a closer round the second round, but still came up short. He still beat me, got me down. Third round, I was like, he doesn't check leg kicks. Dude never checks leg kicks. And so I just started leg kicking him. And we were just, the third round was all stand up pretty much, leg kicks. He put me in the ropes. And I actually rocked him with shoulder punches because he had me up against the rope. And not a lot of people know or use that. So I just kind of dropped my weight down and popped him up. And he actually kind of went limp a little bit. And obviously, I didn't knock him out. He ended up winning the decision. But after that, he's such a cool cat. I mean, the next time I fought him and Pete, why am I fucking forgetting?
No. After you fought him, you fought Uscola, Casey Uscola, another UFC vet.
That got canceled.
Oh, it did get canceled. I got it right here. I apologize. Yep. Yeah, it was supposed to be your next one, Casey Uscola.
Yep. No, I got no fucking easy fights, man.
I try to tell people, it's the guys. There's likes and shares, and then there's locker room respect. And right. It's a completely different conversation, and it's for the superstars in the locker room. Who do they respect as fighters? They're never going to tell you the top-tier guys. They're going to tell you the guys that never say no. Like Jeremy Horn, in my opinion, probably the number one pound-for-pound locker room respect guy. But you also make that list.
I don't know. I don't even think about that shit anymore. I'm just running my facility and being a dad and shit. don't regret it. It's such a fun career, man.
What about Adam Olson? Another guy you used to work out with from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I was Otto. I mean, he bores the shit out of me. He was my training partner. He was a shitty training partner.
Took silver in a 2003 ADCC competition, lost to Marcelo Garcia.
Phenomenal. He's just strong. His wrestling's not even that like super technical. He's just really strong, aggressive. Him and I fought in Florida. He didn't fight. He did a super grappling thingy. And all he did was head snap the guy and he ended up going to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
Butt scooter, right? And then he did. Bah, bah, bah. I mean, he was a hell of a strong wrestler. But as far as he used to irritate me because he'd come in after I was exhausted during fight training and show up. He goes, want to grapple? I'm like, fuck you, Otto. I'm exhausted. I go, well, you're a badass. You're going to come in and want to grapple after I'm exhausted. I go, how about we do MMA? Let's do MMA and I'll do it. He's like, oh, I didn't say MMA. I go, let's do MMA and I'll grapple you. He said, no. I'm like, get away from me.
Reese Andy. Another ADCC. Reese Andy.
Yeah.
Another ADCC vet.
Good guy. Actually, I took last year, I took a guy to his event. It's fun.
Mike Dolce is out that way too. You also rolled with Mike Dolce.
Yeah, we never fought. It was talked about. It was talked about for sure. But no, we got along too. I got along with most of my opponents, except Drew and Steve.
Yeah, because they wanted rematches. And they
could have got it, but I said, I'll rematch you, but I'm not going to rematch you in a smaller venue. I go, you want that rematch? Tell Dana. Otherwise, I'm not interested.
That's awesome. I respect that. I actually respect that a lot.
Yeah, those are hard fucking fights. If you want a rematch, do it on the big show. Otherwise, no. I want to get paid,
You guys were – Charlie Pearson's students were always known for their cardio as well. You guys really did.
Yeah, he really would run us through the gauntlet. It was a really key thing to a lot of these fights. I mean, I took a lot of these fights on short notice, and I wasn't in awesome shape, but I was in good enough shape to hump through them.
Yeah.
That's so I was really never really, really out of shape.
What about Anthony Hamlet, another Pacific Northwest guy? Did pretty well in ADCC.
Yeah, just after hook and shoot, he just didn't do much more after that. So,
you know, another guy got some locker room respect from out by you guys. Let's end it with this. May 2nd, 2008, Ray Perilous is your opponent, Conquest of the Cage. After you win, you get a guy by the name of Phoenix Jones interrupting your victory celebration.
Phoenix Jones, fucking idiot. It's Ben Fodor, and he's a complete fucking tool. We don't like each other. He's trained with me. I've trained with him. He's super explosive. He's very talented, but he's a fucking mental midget. I used to fuck with him all the time because he was so easy to get pissed off. It was fun.
So people at home that might not know, he was like one of the first people to go viral. He would ran around Seattle in a Spider-Man suit.
Batman?
I think it was Spider-Man. Like was it Batman?
I think it was like Batman or something.
Stopping crime in real time was his thing. That was
until he got caught for selling drugs to clubbers.
Yes.
Dumbass. I can say, like, he was my old training partner. I used to fuck. He's okay, put it this way. He's such a goober that we went over to Metropolis for an event. He was fighting. He's got to wear his belts everywhere. I'm like, dude, they're amateur belts. Quit it. You're stupid. And then he's got his little beanie babies in his thing that, like, he carries beanie babies wherever he goes. Right. And he's just a weirdo. And then he's wearing a stupid belt. I was made fun. Like, why are you wearing the belt to the fucking, no one cares you have an amateur title, dude. We're leaving, heading to the airport, getting ready to go home, come back to Seattle. And he keeps staring at this little kid at the airport. I go, what the fuck are you doing, Ben? He's like, I'm about to whoop that kid's ass. I go, he's about 12 years old. Why? And he goes, nobody's going to fucking look at me like that. I don't care if you're fucking 10 years old. I'm like, Ben, you're an idiot. Let's fucking go. You know? And then another incident with him recently after his little fiasco, after getting arrested for selling drugs as Phoenix Jones, because he Venmo'd the deal. That's his intelligence right there. And I hope he sees this, because last time we talked, he personally messaged me because I made a comment on one of his stupid hero posts. And he says, you can't talk to me like that. I know I'll get my ass kicked, but next time I see you, I'm throwing. I go, Ben, you've thrown a million times. You know you're going to get your ass kicked. I go, fuck off. I go, how many times are we going to do this, Ben? He goes, I don't care. You can't disrespect me online like that. I go, I just did. So what he was doing is, after all that shit, you know, he was the superhero trying to be the good guy, and then he turns out to be a little drug dealer. Now he takes his suit off, and now he's following cops and telling them how good of a job they're doing and all this kind of stuff. And my comment was, hey, Ben, did you sell him any Molly? And then he got upset with that and messaged me. I go, okay, we can fight, dude. We've done it. Whatever.
It's what it is. Yeah, in Pacific, you guys got a lot of characters up there, man. A lot of personality up by you.
Yeah, we're a unique area. And it's a fun crew to come up with. And I could have went to the UFC. I opted not to at the time.
Did you try out for the Ultimate Fighter?
On accident, but yeah.
Wait a minute. You were at the Ultimate Fighter tryout
in Seattle
where somebody came dressed like a bird and refused to talk, and all he did
was Dennis Hallman.
It was Dennis Hallman.
100%. Yeah.
It had to have been. I mean, right?
Who else would have done it? He wore he wore shorts with a cock on his cock for the UFC.
Yeah, they said some guy showed up in a bird outfit. They couldn't figure out how it was. He beat everybody's ass and just refused to speak other than chirp, the entire time he was there, including in the interview process.
Friggin' Hallman, dude. He's funnier than shit. So I did on accident. I didn't know that they were even doing middleweights. I thought it was going to be heavyweight. So I was taking Matt Kovacs out there. So I get there, and all of a sudden they have 205ers, 185ers, and heavyweights. I'm like, that's weird. They got three weight classes. But my wife was like, why don't you try out? I go, I'm not here for me. I go, I don't fucking care. She goes, but you're here, so why not? I mean, we're here. I go, well, I'm a welterweight. She goes, but you fight at middleweight. And I go, I don't do that great at middleweight, but yeah, I mean, I've lost to some tough guys at middleweight. And she goes, just try out. I said, all right, fuck it. So I tried out and I just easy. No problem getting through that process. I was picked right away.
I heard you got picked. And then what happened?
So I went to Vegas, did all the shit, did the interviews, talked to Spike TV. They wanted me. You know, at the end of the day, when I left, they're like, you, and they're like, who the fuck managed you? And, you know, because of, you know, all the guys I fought at short notice.
Because of what we just talked about. Yes.
Correct. I go, I just didn't care, bro. I'll fight anyone. He goes, so what makes you so special? I go, what the fuck makes you guys so special? It's like, what? I go, well, you got fucking guys getting colonics and shit on your show. A bunch of pussies, little prima donnas. I go, and I've already beat up some of your best fighters. And he's like, well, what took you? I go, what took you so long? And they're like, you know, I know they're looking for that attitude. So they picked me, went to Vegas, did all the interviews. They winked at me. They said, we'll be giving you a call. Basically, they were saying I'm on. I get the call. And they're like, we love you. You're on the show. But I go, oh, fuck. What's the but? He goes, well, we're not using your weight class now. I go, what do you fucking mean you're not using my weight class? They go, well, originally we planned to do the heavyweights, but Kimbo Slice didn't want to do the show. So if Kimbo didn't sign, we were going to use middleweights and 205ers. And Kimbo said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then he, at the last minute, decided to sign for it. So we're going to use your weight class next season. And I go, listen, I go, I'm 33 years old. I'm on my last run. I'm in a position to do it now. I can't leave next year. I'm not in the position to be gone for 6 weeks. I go, so if you guys really want me to fight, it's either now or never. And they go, well, we want you to redo the tryouts. I go, I'm not redoing the tryouts. I go, you saw me try out. Why do I have to redo them? She goes, because we want you to. I go, but I'm not. They're like, well, then you're not fighting for the UFC. And I go, okay, bye. Click. And I hung up. And then I traveled.
Yeah, you went to what, Korea with Spirit FC? Yeah, you did.
Which is Road FC now.
Yeah.
Signed a deal with them, but they're sneaky too. It was Spirit MC. So the only way they could get rid of their fighter contracts was to kill the whole company. So that's what they did. So they could get rid of all the fighters and start over with the cage and rebrand it and all that. I just signed at the wrong time. I ended up being part of the bullshit at the end of the
organization. Yeah. Well, yeah,
so it was kind of just a bad timing on that one.
Landon Showalter, I sincerely appreciate your time, bro. I really
it was
do.
Fun, Mike. I really appreciate you guys. And I learned some stuff about myself I didn't know as well today.
Yeah, so we do MMA history. We do at least one drop a week, and we put the same amount of effort into this interview as we do like a John Peretti or a Mark Coleman. And dude, your career is absolutely deserving of those two names as well. Being said the same
size. I appreciate it, man. Yeah. It was fun. I don't regret any of it.
Landon, I'll send you a text and we drop it. Should be in about a week. All right?
Sounds good, brother.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Appreciate it was fun. Thanks, bro. Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, I need a favor from everybody. I need a like, a share, a subscribe, comment on YouTube. I need an iTunes review. We got to get that out of you guys. My Mac is about to crash. We need a promoter. We need somebody to come in and do clips, help us with iTunes and Spotify to maximize it. Dude, if you're sitting at home, you enjoy this type of content, and you've got like some sort of ability to help the show, I'm asking you to contact us. We need help. We got really good numbers in regards to like where we are at. I just don't know how to register like our numbers with the agencies that count this shit, so you can kind of see us on a chart. Here's the thing. When we research somebody like Landon Showalter, dude, it takes me a long time. It takes a long time to do it. Like, John Lewis is coming up. I've got 16 hours of research in 2 days on him. It's like a real 16 hours. It's not like a here and there, do this, do that, and then kind of come back to it. There's a ton of research. So if I were to concentrate on like Instagram, our Instagram sucks. if I were to concentrate on like the iTunes ads that keep get offered to me, but I don't know how to accept them or even want to care to try to understand it, what's going to happen is it's going to take me away from the research, and either I have a lesser quality interview or I have to do like an interview every 3 weeks or maybe an interview every other week, because clipping, editing, getting thumbnails, for me to like really concentrate on that, I'm probably going to go through a divorce, because I'm constantly on my phone as it is doing the research and doing more stuff. It's too much. Like I can produce phenomenal content, but to push it out to the masses is where I struggle. And it's not just me. It's Joey. It's Andrew Mendoza, the guys that are on the team that really help watch the fights, you know, help push the content, you know, or the questions forward. If you guys can help out with this, Hong Kong Fooey from the Underground Forum, he's always pumping our stuff on the message boards. Six Demon Bag from the Underground Forum actually got the guts to go on Reddit with all that bullshit going over there and pushing our stuff over there. So it's like, I know I'm good at creating content, procuring information, getting guests to talk about things that they might not want to speak about or haven't spoken about on other podcasts or in interviews in the past. I know I'm really good at that. The other stuff I'm not good at, and I can concentrate on it, but it's going to take away from the content side. And I'm not willing to sacrifice that. Like we're 215, probably by this airs 217 interviews in. And, like if you go from about interview 25 to 30 on forward is when we found our groove. And I'm not willing to sacrifice the, you know, the content for it. Like I know it's going to come. I know someone's going to hear this and eventually come into our lives and help it. But until then, you know, we're getting 1,000 downloads an episode. I mean, and if you told me 3 years ago, I'm going to be speaking to a room of 1,000 people, I'd be like, well, fuck dude, that's a lot of people. I'd be cool with that. But it should be more. It should be more, especially with the content that we're producing. So if you guys want to help out, now's the time to do it. Yeah, we need it. Mac computer, if you know how to refurbish one of those or fix a friggin' Mac, mine's about to friggin' explode. Instagram, you know, Patreon, don't even know how to do it. Things like that. Please get involved. Need your help. Like, share, subscribe, and I'll see you next week.
Check out the full interview on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms.